Okay, here we go. It's time to talk to Mitch Henderson again. And if you've not been listening the last couple of times, I hope you can go and look for his name on the left side and listen in. He has led an extraordinary life, easily good enough for a major motion picture format. And he's going to share some more of it tonight with us. So welcome back, Mitch. Fascinating to hear
just a little bit
of what you've been through. You bet.
There is some updates to what's going on in the world that I thought I better catch up on, though,
Please.
I continue on with the thing. Yeah. So first I want to talk about the fires in Los Angeles. People with swimming pools and a pump saved their homes. Okay, people did that on their own.
Huh.
So what went wrong? The lack of water to put out the fires is the fault of Janice Quinones, a DEI hire of Mayor Karen Barrett Bass to head the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power.
Mm-hmm.
Bass hired her and upped her salary to $750,000 per year,
twice as much
as the last person who had her position. Not only was it her responsibility to make sure there was adequate water supplies, but she's also responsible for the power supply. These fires started when Hurricane Force Santa Ana winds started. The connection.
Yeah.
So many California wildfires are initiated by power lines blown down by the Hurricane Force winds. No one has stated the cause of these catastrophic fires, but if they were caused by downed power lines, we are unlikely to be told that because that would be Janice Quinones' fault for not shutting them down when the Hurricane Force Santa Ana winds were blowing. Law enforcement, the mayor and governor, and the news media will cover for her. Citizens caught an illegal alien from Mexico trying to intentionally start the fires in Woodland Hills neighborhood. Multiple witnesses saw him trying to start fires in their neighborhood. He was caught with a blowtorch. The Los Angeles Police Department and district attorney said there was no evidence that he tried to start a fire and will not be charged with arson. They further state that already convicted of another felony, they will not turn him over to ICE for deportation. This is in line with California's policy of not punishing black and brown people. There is a chance that the evil vigilantes that chase him down and detain him will face charges for battery and false imprisonment. If you're white and go out and loot homes after the fire, the sheriff and prosecutor will arrest you and send you to prison. If you are black and brown and loot homes, you will be arrested and held for a few days before charges are dropped and you are released, just like the illegal immigrant trying to start the fires. White people may not commit crimes. Black and brown people are expected and even encouraged to commit crimes. What great
and probably paid to commit crimes in some... Look,
So what great abilities did Janice Quinones bring to L.A.? During Hurricane Maria in September 2017, Janice Quinones was appointed to lead the post-hurricane efforts to restore electrical power in Puerto Rico. Let us track how well she did. On day one, 95% of the island was without power. 2 weeks later, 89% of the island was without power. 1 month later, 88% of the island was without power. 3 months later, 45% of the island was without power. And 11 months later, power was restored to the island. Keeping in mind, electricity is life for many people. If you don't have electricity, you could die. Okay, if you lived in Puerto Rico, in American territory, would you be happy with Janice taking care of you? After this dismal failure, Mayor Karen Bass not only gives her a critically important responsibility in Los Angeles, she doubles her pay. This is DEI, rewarding failure, promoting incompetency. Upon taking the position, Janice Quinones stated that her most important task was to hire underprivileged and marginalized people as employees. This is, by the way, means retiring, laying off, and firing competent employees that just happen to be straight white males. Diversity means anything but straight white males. Equity means ignoring merit, competency, and ability, and looking at race, ethnicity, gender and sexual orientation as the standards for hiring. Inclusion means the exclusion of straight white males and people with the ability, because ability or ableism is racism. Karen Bass made the DEI the most important objective of her administration.
Yes, she did.
Her second objective was to stop homelessness. Her third was to reduce incarceration of brown and black people. Under her tenure, the city staff has become more diverse. Homelessness has expanded out of control. Brown and black incarceration has decreased as rampant crime and an atmosphere of lawlessness have overwhelmed the city. She cut funding to the fire department by almost $18 million last year and proposed another $49 million cut. Fire Chief Kristen Crowley also got her position as a DEI hire. She is a lesbian female and leads the gay pride parade in the city. She stated that her number one priority was DEI. She said that people wanted people like them to come and rescue them and put out fires. In view of the current fire situation in Los Angeles, the victims have said that they do not care what kind of people come out to put out the fires. What is really important is that somebody, anybody, comes to the rescue. The mechanical maintenance of fire trucks is the direct responsibility of the fire chief. A full 15% of all fire trucks are out of commission because they can't get maintained. Karen Bass says it is because they can't seem to hire enough mechanics to fix them. Could the real problem be that she will not hire straight white male to be mechanics?
That's
she
right.
Can't find enough people of the other kind to be mechanics.
Yep.
Her assistant fire chief, Christine Lawson, who looks like a man, okay, but is a woman, a real woman, okay, she said, they asked her, what about these weaker people that the fire department hires? Can they carry a man out of a burning building? And she said, well, if a man is in a burning building, that's his fault, and it's on him. It's not on the fire department. So, no, you don't have to be strong enough to do your job, in other words. Okay, so Sheriff Robert Luna made the reduction of violent crime and addressing homelessness as his campaign promises in 2022. Since then, both problems have gotten out of control, the worst in Los Angeles history. He is an elected DEI person like Karen Bass. His story is that he resents the way that law enforcement treats Chicanos. That's his life story right there. While he was chief of Long Beach Police Department, he had his police department stand down in the 2020 George Floyd riots and allowed the city to be vandalized and looted. He did nothing to stop them. When people complain that as chief, he did not have enough minorities, Chief Luna said that he could hire more minorities into the academy classes, but promotions were covered by civil service laws, and the promotions had to go by who scored the highest on the civil service test. In other words, DEI cannot work if merit is required. DEI equals didn't earn it. Institutions decay when incompetence is promoted. This is directly the reason that Los Angeles is burning, because incompetent people are in charge. So just to make that crystal clear, this is why this is happening. The worst disaster in Los Angeles history is happening because they have intentionally elected and hired incompetent people. They have put Yep. race, gender, and sexual orientation as the primary requirement for any jobs in L.A. government, okay? And that has worked out just wonderful, hasn't it? Next thing
it's
I want
incredible.
To touch upon is the January 6th pardons. So just as Joe Biden showed his lack of integrity in his federal death row pardons, the Trump administration is also signaling the same in the January 6th pardons. Joe Biden says he is morally and ethically opposed to the death penalty. Therefore, he granted clemency to everybody on federal death row except for the Boston Marathon bomber, the guy who shot the black church members in Charleston, South Carolina, and the guy who shot up a Jewish synagogue in Pittsburgh. This does go to integrity. Either the death penalty is wrong for everybody or it is not. It is okay to execute white supremacists, anti-Semites, and Islamic terrorists, that attack liberal cities. That is what that deserves death. Okay. So he's got no integrity in his argument. When J.D. Vance was asked about the January 6th pardons, he said they would have to look at each case. No integrity right here. If the January 6th insurrection was a fiction created by the Democratic Party, the Department of Justice, and the FBI, then a blanket pardon is in order. If someone left in prison, then the January 6th insurrection is a real event. Obviously worse than Pearl Harbor and 9/11. The Trump administration is showing moral cowardice even before getting into office.
I agree.
We all know that there was no violence on that day except for the Capitol Police murdering a female Air Force veteran, Ashley Babbitt. That was the only violence.
That was an execution that day. That girl should not have been shot.
It was an execution. Yes. Nobody's suggesting that be investigated and tried. But people who were maybe a little bit too violent that day, well, they're going to leave them in jail, the Trump administration. It makes you wonder, will they really build a wall on the border, or will they say that Congress would not fund it? Will they really deport all illegal aliens, or will they say that the courts block them from doing it? Will they really stop the DEI practices in government, or will they say that established administrative law prohibits them from purging DEI hires? I bet a year from now there will still be 15,000 trannies serving openly in our military. Crime will not be reduced because most crimes are state crimes and the federal government has no say at all over what local district attorneys do. The Trump administration cannot alter the judgment of judges. All they can do is appoint better judges. And that takes time to have an effect. Trump promised to stop funding Ukraine, but then appoints General Kellogg, who, like Mike Pompeo and Sebastian Gorka, wants to give Zelensky $1 trillion, five times more than Biden gave Zelensky. Were you not listening to us, Mr. Trump? The American voters gave Trump a mandate that it looks like he is going to completely ignore, okay? They're already saying it could take 100 days or 6 months to stop this war. Okay, what happened to the 24 hours?
Okay, so it's all BS, typical Trump BS. Yep. Yeah, we know.
Yeah, let's look at the Ukraine war. Donald Trump made America two very clear promises on Ukraine. First, that he would stop sending them money. Second, that he would end the war in Ukraine.
Uh-huh.
He was very clear on both of those points. The first promise was important to the American people. They are tired of sending an obscene amount of money to Zelensky so he can squander it senselessly. The second promise was important to Trump's ego. He wants to get credit for a peace treaty between Russia and Ukraine. This is important to his ego. This is not important to the American people who could give a shit less what happens in Ukraine. Trump has no capacity to understand this. He became president to do what he wants to do, and he could actually care less what the American voter or people want. He can't be elected again, so this presidency is his personal vanity project.
That's right.
What will Trump do? What he wants, or what the people who voted for him want? He appointed General Kellogg to be his point man in Ukraine. General Kellogg could care less what his fellow Americans want. He only cares what his warmongering neocon friends want. His thoughts on Ukraine are the same as Mike Pompeo's and Sebastian Gorka. They want to humiliate and defeat Russia. They tell Trump that they can force Russia to accept a NATO-acceptable deal by giving Ukraine $1 trillion, five times more than what Biden gave Ukraine. This will not work because those terms are an existential threat to Russia. Putin would have to betray his nation, his people, and the Russian Orthodox Church to accept Kellogg's deal. It would be the death of Putin and the death of and dismemberment of Russia. Kellogg, Gorka, and Pompeo want to depose Putin and break Russia into 17 weak and powerless states that will be run by women and sodomites. Russia would not take their deal if the U.S. gave Ukraine $10 trillion. Plan B, and this is important because you've been seeing this in the news every day, Plan B is is a personal delusion of Donald Trump. The media said that Trump had no wars last time because he was seen as an unstable and unpredictable leader. All he has to do is act crazy and everyone will do what he wants. Trump is a shallow thinker with a very superficial understanding of the world. Trump has internalized this narrative and believes it is true. What does Trump do to play the part? He offers to buy Greenland from Denmark and threatens economic sanctions against Denmark if they refuse to sell. He says that if he has to use military force, he will. Denmark is a NATO ally. He says that he is convinced that Canada should become a part of the United States, that Canada cannot survive without selling goods to the United States. This is true. He could tariff and embargo Canada into submission. Canada is a NATO ally. He says he's going to change the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. He says he's going to send the U.S. military to Mexico to fight the cartels. Since we have already taken half of Mexico from Mexico during the Mexican War in 1848, Mexican will strenuously oppose this. We could face a situation where we will be fighting the Mexican government and possibly the Mexican people. Trump says he is going to demand the Panama Canal back. Trump says he will take it back by military force if necessary. This is crazy talk indeed. Russia is 6,600 square miles in size. The United States is only half the size at 800,000 square miles. If we added Canada, which has 800,000 square miles also, then we could be bigger than Russia at 7,600,000 square miles. At Greenland, and we would have 8,400,000 square miles, but still smaller than the Soviet Union was at 8,600,000 square miles. This is what Trump's looking at. We were going to be the biggest country in the world under him. He's going to make us the biggest country. He's going to take the Panama Canal back. Okay. So this is just crazy talk. He thinks this crazy talk is going to scare Putin into making a deal with him. They just don't understand. Russia is surrounded on the east, the west, the north. They are not going to allow us to surround them on the south. They will not do it. They will not do it. They will not do it. They will go to nuclear war rather than do that. But our leaders have no concept.
They have it, but
it's obvious. But
Mitch, they have every right to do whatever they need to protect themselves.
They do.
Period. This is
yes,
a no-brainer.
They do.
Go ahead.
So the last thing that I just want to bring up real quick here is the new pandemic alert. On January 11th, the New York Times reported that a new epidemic has broken out in China, this time with HMPV virus. Let me nip this in the bud. You, your parents, your kids, and everyone you know has had HMPV virus multiple times in your life. It is not a new virus like they want you to think. It is an old virus that causes the common cold. If we learned anything from COVID pandemic, we should have learned not to listen to scientists, the media, or the government when it comes to these absurd pandemics. Fear is the currency of control. This will not change under the Trump administration. For the Christians in the audience, it is just this simple. Satan controls us through fear. He creates anxiety. Anxiety is distrust of God. Distrust of God is lack of faith in God. Lack of faith in God is disbelief in God. If you are not religious, you still need to ignore the fear-mongering that the government and their propaganda organ, the mainstream media, propagates. They create problems to make you trust them to protect you. They want to control you. They want you to obey, but they will never protect you, not ever. Who is the author of these campaigns and conspiracy theories? Every hour of every day, the Central Intelligence Agency is pumping out new conspiracy theories to sow fear and confusion. They would like you to believe that they have power way beyond what they have. Government control depends on voluntary compliance. The government really has little real power. The CIA and their running dogs in the media just try to give the appearance of power. I am saying not to fear what the government says, and don't fear the government either. Just do what you have to do to survive, because the government will never protect or help you. The government will never protect or help you. The government of the United States just has two objectives, people, to impoverish you and to have sex with your kids. That's the only thing they care about, to kill a hell of a lot of us, too.
Don't forget that.
That's a given. Of course they want to
stand it. You bet.
So I just thought I should kind of comment on those things and nip that HPMV thing in the bud. That's a disease everybody's had. It's a common cold. They get a new name, and they make it look exotic, and they scare people with it, and it's nothing, okay? So they no doubt are already talking about making a mRNA vaccine to protect you from it, okay? So... Anyways, well, let me get back to me dealing with the Cali cartel down there. So last time when I broke off. So this is all in my book, The Final Wars: How to Survive the coming Civil War, the World War III, and the Collapse of Civilization. It's available on Amazon by Mitchell Henderson. Okay, you can just type in The Final Wars, Mitchell Henderson. It'll show up, okay? So so this is I'm talking now about how I know how to survive, because it comes from experience, okay? There's education behind it, too, but it's a lot of experience, okay? So last time I broke up, I'm in the headquarters of the Cali Cartel with the big bosses, okay?
Fascinating story. Fascinating.
Everything is a test, okay? The managers and sicarios took me out to dinner and out to party. It was important that I get drunk for real. I had practiced keeping in character while drunk for years. I was not going to slip up and give anything away, and yet would be drunk enough to convince them that I was who I was claiming to be. People like to get you drunk to see if you'll slip up and say who, you know, show your real self and stuff. It's a very common tactic, okay? Anybody who's been in a penitentiary or prison knows about this. As soon as you go into prison, the tests begin. They always test you and prod you constantly. Okay. So in a criminal organization, they do the same thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So I asked the bosses' wives to dance, and of course, stepped on their toes. They were gracious ladies. They did not complain. It was an act, and I acted well. Good acting in this business did not get you an Oscar. It lets you keep on living. They were very comfortable with me. If I focused on making myself feel comfortable, they would sense that. I should be focusing on making them comfortable because I want the million-dollar deal that they are offering. That's reality. Psychology is strategy. Psychology is strategy. Okay. Before I left, a sicario bought me over a bag of money for travel expenses. Okay.
Literally a bag. A bag.
Yes, a bag. Bag of money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Mr. Rada was Radamus. Now, this is a guy who he called. The boss called Mr. Rada to come and see me, okay? And when he wasn't there, the boss gave Mr. Rada's wife his telephone number, and it was. I memorized that number, and that's the number that brought down the Cali cartel. That minute destroyed the Cali cartel, okay? So Mr. Rada, who they called, was a guy named Radamus Trujillo. He was the playboy son of the former dictator of the Dominican Republic, Rafael.
I remember this guy.
Leonidas Trujillo.
I remember. Yeah.
The family had siphoned off the Dominican National Treasury into Swiss bank accounts. They had over $100 million. When Trujillo was overthrown in 1961, Radamus went to Paris with his family, married the French actress Danielle Gobert, and took all the family's money for himself. The Swiss arrested him, but his name was on the account, so there was no crime in taking it. He was released. This was big news in its day, a major scandal. If you were around in the early 60s, you would be aware of it. Miguel Rodriguez, the crime lord of Cali, he knew this story. In 1983, Radamus had divorced his wife and moved to Panama. He started working with the Cali cartel and supervised smuggling in Central America for the Cali cartel. Once I got back from Cali to Costa Rica, Mr. Rada called me to touch base. He had said that he would be up soon to check out my business. San Jose was just a short flight from Panama City. I waited. I had a convincing show ready for him and was ready to make sure he had a good time. And then he called me again and said that he had been delayed. This was in the spring of 1990. Then I had to call Kiko in Cali and ask him where the hell Mr. Rada was. Kiko just told me that I should not worry about it. Mr. Rada was busy and did not have time to come. The DEA filled me in later. Trujillo did not come to Costa Rica because 1 metric ton of cocaine got busted by the Panamanian policemen in Panama City Harbor. It was an honest bust. The Cali bosses were not sure if they could trust him, so they no longer wanted him to know about my operation. After the metric ton of cocaine bust in the spring of 1990, Mr. Rada lost 2 more large loads. In August 1994, Miguel invited Mr. Rada and his friend Antonio Danico Ocampo to Cali for his birthday party. Ocampo was a former Costa Rican narcotics cop who allegedly worked for the USDEA. Miguel insisted that Ocampo bring his wife, Emilia Falas Araya, to the party. When they arrived in Cali, Jorge Salcido, Miguel's security chief, had them taken to Pacho Herrera's ranch El Desierto outside of Cali. They took them back to a shed, tied them up, and tortured them to see if they had betrayed the cartel. They specifically wanted Ocampo's wife to come because they were more likely to get Ocampo to talk by torturing her. After the most extreme and cruel torture, they all denied betraying the loads. Once he was satisfied, Jorge Salcido told the boss what he found out, and the boss signaled the sicario Guillermo Lara to execute them all. He put a bag over their heads and strangled them with a rope. Their bodies have never been found. Later, a DEA official in Washington, D.C., told me that although Ocampo had at one point worked with the DEA, that he and Mr. Rada had never betrayed the cartel. All 3 busts were legitimate takedowns that happened by chance, just a cop doing their job without any inside competition. The Cali cartel policy was, when in doubt, take them out. This is the risk you have to take when you're working for a big criminal organization. If something goes wrong, well, you're going to have to pay, even if you didn't do it.
Mitch, you are very fortunate to have survived that. You're very lucky to have survived that. Or very shrewd, and you plotted your way out of it, but I'm amazed you...
It's luck also. Yeah. It's luck also. Don't discount luck, okay? What luck really is it's where skill meets opportunity. That's what luck.
Good. Skill, and where skill meets opportunity. I like that. That's luck.
Right.
Good.
That's
you make
luck.
Your own luck. All right.
Yep. So in April 1990, Kiko called me and asked me to meet him and some business bosses in San Andres, Colombia for Holy Week holiday. San Andres is an island out in the Caribbean and was closer to Costa Rica than to Colombia. It is a pretty and fun place to visit. I had already been there several times just to party. I called my partners in Tampa and told them. They called me back and told me to go to a payphone and call them. They asked me if Miguel was going to be in San Andres. I said that they were not going to tell me over the phone. Miguel was one of the top 10 men wanted in the world at the time. He had to be careful traveling. They wanted me to call them from a phone booth when I got to San Andres and tell them if Miguel was there to meet me. They asked me if I would be willing to help them kidnap Miguel and bring him back to the United States for trial. I said, sure, but how are we going to do it? They said SEAL Team 4 would infiltrate onto the island and make contact with me. An aircraft carrier from the 4th Fleet would be offshore far enough not to be noticed. The helicopter would then come pick us up and Miguel after we snatched him. I told them that there was a large Colombian naval base on San Andres. They said they knew. We would have to be fast. I said that I had to leave on the chopper with them if they did this, because I would be majorly burned. They said, of course, we have planned for that. You will be with the SEAL team the whole time. Just keep up with them. On Good Friday, I flew to San Andres. None of the Colombians showed up. I could not leave because everything was closed for Holy Week. This is how it is in Latin America. During Holy Week, everything shuts down. Nobody's doing business. I just chilled on the beach. I called Kiko, and he told me that they could not get a flight because it was Holy Week. I called the import-export office in Tampa and told them that the Cali guards did not show up. On this line, we were very careful what we said because someone might be listening. Maybe they had me fly to San Andres to spy on me and see who I called. The Cali cartel had their own national security agency that bugged phones. We had to keep that in mind any time we were in Colombia. The snatch and grab was off the table. Shit happens, and sometimes shit does not happen. Okay? So later that month, I traveled to Cali to put the finishing touches on our smuggling plan. I went to a big office with a conference room. They had me sit outside the conference room while the upper management conferred in the other room. They had a big, ugly, mean-looking sicario named Bigote sit across from me and just stare at me with dead, cold, soulless eyes. This was a test. If I talked to him, it would mean that I was nervous. He was doing this precisely to make me nervous. These people are extremely violent. They play with their food, okay? So what can I do? I can't try to talk to him because his move would be to not respond to edge the tension up.
Unreal.
I must do something or they will think I am nervous. I started picking my nose. The sicario did not want to stare at me anymore while I was picking my nose, okay? So when
That's
a boss
really
came out
funny.
To collect me, well, you have to think of something to do. I mean, you've got to be innovative, right?
That is brilliant. That was a brilliant move.
I
give you 5 stars on that. Wow.
So when the boss came to collect me, the sicario stood up when I did. The sicarios must be polite and courteous if they hang out with the bosses. So I extended the hand that I was picking my nose with to shake the sicario's hand. I could tell he really did not want to, but he had to behave in front of the bosses, and he shook it. If you must deal with such men, you must be prepared to be a bigger asshole than they are. This is tactics, okay? So mindset is 90% of the effort. You cannot think that they are a danger to you. You must be convinced that you are, in fact, a mortal danger to them. The next test was in the meeting. We planned where the cocaine was going to leave from Buenaventura, Colombia. It was going to come ashore at Herradura Beach in Costa Rica. When the smuggler showed up that would take the cocaine to the boat at Buenaventura, the smuggler was nervous about taking it to Costa Rica because they had a few honest cops. I had already hung out with Kiko and knew he was a smartass. Kiko told the smuggler, there's nothing to worry about. Mitch is a DEA agent. The smuggler, who was very dark-complected, turned white with fear. I guess he thought this was an untouchables moment where Al Capone beats a guy's brains out with a baseball bat. It struck me as funny, and I started laughing for real. This was the correct response. This is tactics. They were expecting me to be shocked. If I was really an agent, I would feel like I was outed at that time. But they know this, you know. So after the meeting, a sicario named Carlos drove me and the bosses to a travel agency to buy tickets for San Andres. Miguel would not be going. Carlos dropped us off and went to park the car. This was in a nice neighborhood in Cali. When Carlos came in, Kiko asked him to get some papers out of the trunk. When Carlos returned the second time, he said that someone had stolen the side view mirror off the car. The Cali cartel bosses, leaders of what was at that time the largest, richest, and most dangerous criminal organization on earth, said, and I quote, something has to be done about the crime in this country. I had to laugh inside at the irony. I didn't laugh
that
at the
is,
face.
That's,
I had to laugh.
No, yeah, I don't. How'd you keep from laughing out loud? Jeez.
Yeah, really. So we flew to San Andres the next day. We're going to meet Clara Inez de Duque, a Colombian blonde who was flying down from Miami. She was the person that I was going to deliver the drugs to when I got the shipment to Florida. She was a beautiful Colombian woman. We all went dancing that night. The next day, there was more partying, and another test. We rented a boat to take us to Johnny's Cay, a small spit of sand off the island. We had a local Sicario join us for this party. His name was Mono, meaning monkey. They normally would not let him hang out with them because he was an obnoxious asshole. He was a street-level Sicario they used to whack street-level people. I figured that I would have to put up with him. When we landed, we ordered drinks from a vendor with an ice chest. Mono got a beer. I asked for a Coco Loco that was just shaved ice and rum mixed in a coconut. Kiko did also. Mono started giving me crap about my drink. But Kiko got the same thing, and Mono was not saying anything to him. It was clear that he was present to give me a hard time. I told him that I wanted a Coco Loco. I could get a beer anywhere. I got on a jet ski and started driving around. Mono climbed on back. Mono fell off. I turned around and started to run over him. It turns out that he was not a very good swimmer. Kiko saw what I was doing and said in just a very matter-of-fact manner, he said, Mitch, don't kill him. We need him. Just very casually. So I dragged Mono back to the shore, and he finally shut up. He did not hang out with us further. I think they wanted to see if I would kill him. He was extremely annoying. He annoyed them. Okay. In May, Kiko called me and said the ladies were on their way up. He said Carlos was going to fly up to help me. I had rented a Toyota pickup truck to drive to the beach. They were only shipping 150 kilos this time as a test. We would be paid the same. I rented a warehouse to store the cocaine once we picked it up. Carlos arrived at the airport, and I picked him up. He was not an annoying Sicario, so we got along fine. He stayed at my apartment in Sabinilla. I slept soundly, but he should not have. I fell asleep thinking about ways I could murder him in his sleep. I thought about how I could murder him while he was eating breakfast. This is being on the offensive to actually have the initiative. Uh-huh. I had to think about how I was going to kill him without provocation. I did not want to have a defensive mindset. That is a victim mindset. They were my victims. They were my victims. They were my prey. I was not in mortal danger. They were. I tried to stay in character all the time. Of course, I didn't tell him that I wanted to kill him. I just wanted to kill him. So we drove to Herradura Beach during Saturday morning and stayed in a hotel. We partied that night. Carlos was a cold, hard man, but that night he had horrific nightmares. I just let him scream. The boat would arrive from Colombia about midnight Sunday. In the morning, we drove out to the beach and set up a tent as if we were going to camp. Slowly, families were packing up to go home. We wanted everybody off the beach. The men that were bringing the cocaine up to us were pirates. Real pirates, the kind that do not leave witnesses. As it was getting dark, there was a German couple with a daughter who were lingering on the beach. I told Carlos that I wished they would leave because the German lady was real nice looking. Carlos replied, and this is a quote, "Mitch, we are not animals. We will, of course, put that lady to one last use before we kill her." He was not making a smart-ass remark. He was serious. Carlos said that the boat crew would take their bodies out to the deep sea and dump them so no one would ever know what happened to them. The Germans ate some dinner, then packed up and left. I was relieved. I could not let the pirates kill them, but all I had was a revolver with 6 shots. Talking about a drug deal gone bad, I might not make it, but I would absolutely have to intervene.
Wow.
You got to put human life first. You can't let them kill innocent people. They know that, but that's how they know if you're a bad guy also. Okay. So midnight came and the boat from Colombia had not shown up. We were the only ones on the beach, and I got tired. Once the cocaine arrived, I would have to drive back to the capital. I told Carlos that I needed to sleep and asked him if he would stay awake for the boat. He said, sure. I crashed. At 2 a.m. on Monday morning, the boat showed up. Carlos opened the tent and said, Mitch, wake up. They're here. I looked out into the Pacific and saw them flashing a flashlight at us. We started flashing our flashlight every 5 minutes so they knew where to come ashore. The captain came ashore first with a couple of pirates armed with rifles. The captain just had a pistol tucked in his belt. Carlos had met this captain in Colombia, so they knew each other. The captain pointed at me, and Carlos said, "He is with us. Let me introduce Mitch. You will see him again." For such a bunch of cutthroats, they are very polite and courteous in these circumstances. I could see that the two young pirates were very tense until that moment. Then they relaxed, too. The pirates began bringing the cocaine ashore. The day before, we had bought a bunch of 5-gallon gas cans and filled them up with gas. Once they unloaded the cocaine, they took the gasoline for their trip back to Colombia. I also had some sodas and snacks for the crew. The Carly cartel was all about logistics, foresight, and preparation. They were considerate. That is operational art. We wished each other luck, and they went back out to sea. Carlos and I drove back towards San Jose. We had to go through a Guardia Civil checkpoint before we arrived in San Jose. The cocaine was stuffed in a big garbage bags in the back of the pickup truck, which had a camper shell on it.
How many pounds?
150 pounds. No, 150 kilos, 300 pounds, about 320 pounds.
Wow. Okay. All processed.
So I could tell
how much would that be?
All processed.
How much would that be cut before use, Mitch? How would you cut it? 10 to 1?
Step on it about 5 times.
5 times.
Step on that 5 times, yeah.
All right. Mitch just said he used the correct language. Of course. Step on it. That's what you do when you cut cocaine or anything else to lessen the intensity of it. 5 times. Okay. Yeah.
So I told him to just act like he was asleep because I did not want him to give us away because he was kind of freaking out when we approached the police thing. And I didn't want him signaling to the police. I said, just act like you're asleep. So he had told me that when he first started with the cartel, he was a mule that carried cocaine in suitcases from Suriname to the Netherlands on airliners. I guess that had become too much for him because he was not handling it well. You might think that I did not have to worry, but you would be wrong. You see, in Latin America, law enforcement has no immunity if they commit a crime. It is just as illegal for a law enforcement officer, or a contractor in my case, to possess and transport cocaine as it is for the bad guys to do it. It is illegal to do buy busts, reverse things, or infiltrate smuggling operations. What we were doing in Costa Rica was absolutely against Costa Rican law. If the Guardia Civil found the cocaine, I would get at least 8 years minimum in some shitty Costa Rican prison. The U.S. government would not be able to get me out. But I was not worried. There would be time to worry later. I had to deal with the task at hand. I had the equivalent of $20 in my hand in Costa Rican colones. As soon as I pulled up to the checkpoint, I handed the money to the Guardia Civil. If I had a couple million dollars worth of cocaine in my truck, sitting in bags in plain view, why would I only offer a bribe of $20? Because $20 said that I had nothing of interest in my truck and I just wanted to make time towards my destination. Giving a bigger bribe would make them think I had contraband.
Got it.
This is a deception operation. I mean, listen, I lived in Latin America over 10 years. I knew about bribing checkpoints, all that. I've done it time and time again. I mean, you know, I knew the routine, okay?
You sure
it's very
did.
Comfortable.
I was not
a novice at dealing in Latin America.
Priceless knowledge and wisdom in Mitchell Henderson's mind. Wow. This is a great movie, a great motion picture. Maybe somebody listening will figure it out.
When we got to my apartment in San Jose, Carlos was exhausted. I asked him if he wanted to go with me to the warehouse on the other side of town. He had enough excitement and did not want to risk it. Good for me. I drove to a park to call the DEA attaché at the embassy on a payphone to let him know that I was in San Jose with the cocaine. He told me to take the cocaine to my warehouse, unload it, then drive away and call him back. This was being carefully choreographed with the Costa Rican OIJ, the Office of Judicial Investigation, which is like our FBI. After I unloaded the cocaine, I locked the warehouse, drove to a payphone, and called the embassy. The OIJ raided the warehouse with a SWAT team for show. They already knew that no one would be there. They actually had a key to get there. Okay, so that's what kind of raid that was. Okay. I dropped Carlos at the airport the next day. He was glad to be leaving. I was glad that he was leaving. Next was the delivery of the cocaine. Kiko called me in Florida and asked me if I would drive the cocaine south to Miami. I said, sure. He was surprised that I was willing to do it. He expected me to balk at the suggestion. I told him that I was a middle-aged white guy, and the cops never pull me over, and the cops look for drugs going north from Miami, not south into Miami. What is the big deal? I rented a van and put dummy cocaine into it. Glenn Roberts, a female customs special agent, went with me as my girlfriend. We drove to a McDonald's restaurant in the Miami suburb of Kendall. A federal SWAT team was hiding in the parking lot. They were well hidden. I did not notice anything out of usual. Clara Inez de Duque, who I met in San Andres, rented a sedan and met us at the restaurant. Everything was low-key with the Cali cartel. They knew how not to attract attention to themselves. We ate breakfast so that we looked normal. We exchanged car keys. Clara would leave in the van, and we would leave in the car she rented. When Clara went out to get in the van, the SWAT team arrested her. They then got her to lead them to all the people she was supposed to make deliveries to. Everyone involved was arrested. The U.S. government gave this case to the Colombian government since the deal was made on Colombian soil. I had to fly up to Washington, D.C. to meet with the Colombian prosecutors. Miguel Rodriguez Orihuela got his underlings to swear in court I had never met him. Miguel talked some senators and governors as well as a Catholic priest to provide an alibi for him. However, the fact that I knew the date and time of his phone call to Panama did him in. Once they tied the phone call to him, his story fell apart. What was the likelihood of me knowing that phone number and that date and time and destination of the call if I was not there? The only way I could have known it was if I was there. Miguel Rodriguez Orihuela was convicted and got 27 years in a Colombian prison. So did his brother, Gilberto Rodriguez Orihuela, and the third partner, Jose Londoño Santa Cruz, the chess player. One phone call lasting just a few moments brought down the largest, the richest, the most violent, and the most professional criminal research organization in the world at that time. It is the little things that get you. Please remember that if you want to survive, complacency kills. I have survived much. I have survived the life on the street, the wilderness, the sea, anarchy, revolutions, and wars. Will I survive the coming Civil War and World War III? Sure, why not? Can you survive it? Sure, why not? And that's why I wrote this book, The Final Wars, How to Survive the Coming Civil War, World War III, and the Collapse of Civilization.
Well,
it comes from training and experience.
You're never going to find a book like this. You owe it to yourself to get this book. The Last Wars. Mitchell Henderson is one of the most uniquely qualified people to talk about all of these subjects that you will ever find. You can't do any better. And I very much want to thank you for sharing all this. I think you do so at some risk. This is not talked about. This is like being there, okay? You're right in the middle of it, all of you. So get the book. Get the book, and you'll be happy you did. It's the Bible of survival. If you want to survive, you'll have the book.
And you'll notice when I'm talking about my survival experiences, I really focus on the civilian things I did to survive, okay? Because the people that you have to deal with will be like the criminals and the street people. Not only that, when society collapses, most of the people that you know will become criminals. People will become desperate, and they will resort to crime, to cheating. So you got to know how to deal with them, okay?
Wow, Mitch. Wow, what a life. I hope someone's listening who might be interested in working with Mitchell on a great screenplay to submit. I mean, this would be one hell of a movie. All right, my friend. Thank you. That was terrific. You've probably got a box full more of memories like these and experiences that, I mean, as a cop, as a soldier, as a tank commander, etc. It's a wild world out there. Thank you, Mitch. You're really quite a fabulous resource for information and insight to things that most people would never understand. Get Mitch's book, The Last Wars. Just go to Amazon, write in Mitchell Henderson, and you'll find it.
The Final
All right.
Wars.
Yes, yes, yes. Anything, we got to run here. We're running really late. Thank you just for everything. It's been great,
okay,
as always. Okay, Mitch. Good night. All right, and thank you for being here on this Monday night. We will be back with you tomorrow night in 21 hours. Stay well, stay safe, and prepare. All right? And don't forget, USA Prepares with Vincent Finelli on the network. Invaluable information there, too. All right, be right back in 21 hours.